This episode of The Pitch is brought to you exclusively by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's where State Farm Small Business Insurance comes in. State Farm agents are small business owners themselves, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. At the 2016 Summer Olympics, there was this moment at the pool right before the 100-meter relay. The swimmers were all doing that thing where they shake out their arms, but Michael Phelps was standing poolside completely in the zone with his headphones on. The gold medal was on the line, but what everyone watching on TV wanted to know was, what music is he listening to? To the world, it was a cultural moment, but what an entrepreneur named Jason Fox saw was a billion-dollar opportunity. And that's why he's here today, asking investors for $3 million to build his startup, Earbuds. From Gimlet, this is The Pitch. I'm Josh Muccio. Our investors today?
I'm Charles Hudson.
Charles started Precursor Ventures, where he's invested $45 million in over 100 startups to date.
I'm Jillian Manis.
Jillian is a partner at Structure Capital, where they've invested $98 million in high-profile startups like Uber.
I'm Michael Hyatt.
Michael built and sold two software companies for over $500 million, and now he invests for himself.
I'm Phil Nadell.
Phil has built companies that sold for hundreds of millions of dollars. Now he manages Forefront Venture Partners, one of the largest syndicates on AngelList. Okay, on with the pitch.
Hey there.
Hello. Hi.
Wow, are you, Jason you very
Jason, I'm
tall.
Phil.
Phil, nice to meet you, Jason.
Hey. I've never seen the mic stand this high up.
Yeah, they had a
yep, Jason is tall, 6'7". He's standing at the mic, towering over the investors. They've got big grins and wide eyes. And when they find out he's a former NFL player, they're starstruck.
I probably should know this, but what team did you play on?
I played 4 years for the Lions, then a couple more with the Dolphins after that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm a lifelong Lions fan from Detroit.
Oh, yeah?
I'm a South Florida guy.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You notice I didn't say I'm a Dolphins fan. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I love the fish.
I love the fish. Okay. Okay, sorry about that. Go for it, Jason
awesome.
Fox.
Well, I'm Jason Fox. I'm the founder of Earbuds, and the idea for Earbuds came actually in my last career. I played in the NFL for 6 years, just recently retired a couple years ago. And it was during that time, I always had this same idea over and over again. And it really, the first time I thought of it, we were opening with Carolina. I was warming up right next to Cam Newton. He was on the field.
Oh, about, I love Cam Newton. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
He was about 5 feet away from me, and he's jamming. He's getting the crowd into it. He's just getting into the rhythm right before a game. And I said, man, there's 85,000 people here. There's millions more watching this game at home. Cam is an individual that has tens of millions of social media followers. Like, how many people would love to be in his headphones right now? Hmm. It was the number one question asked at the last two Super Bowl media days. It's the number one question asked around the Olympics. What are you listening to? Mm-hmm. Well, Earbuds have solved that. So we've partnered with Spotify and Apple Music. And so instead of just listening to music, we allow you to broadcast it where other people can tune in live and listen along with you in complete synchronized real time.
Basically, it's the closest you'll get to being inside the head of your favorite celebrity.
You want to see it?
Yeah, let's try it.
Yeah, cool.
Okay, so you're pulling out your phone.
Okay.
We're looking at a screen that says stream your music.
Yep, this is the app. So these are all people live listening to their music right now.
Scrolling through.
Well, who's listening to Drake?
If you hit listen along, you start completely synchronized with them.
With a tap of his finger, the music starts playing. Right in the middle of the song.
Casting, because we got NBA, NFL, X Games. We got so many people interested in using our tech.
But why earbuds? As soon as I saw you, I'm like, wow, what kind of new earbuds are you?
Right.
Like, why?
Isn't like, friend, a...
like, buds. Exactly. Like, we're earbuds. We're earbuddies.
Yeah, I'm slow, but they could, I thought you were making
earbuds.
Earbuds. Is this another revenue stream for, like, a boxer walking into the ring? What is he listening to? You know how they write things on their body? They'll sell anything to sell. Would they sell the ability to broadcast the music?
Influencers are obviously very forward-thinking now and knowing that what that relationship they have with their following and be able to engage with their fans in a whole new way through music. We've had labels, music promoters, artists want to launch new content through influencers, right? And they can brokerage their own deals around that. Imagine being the first song on Tom Brady's playlist right before the Super Bowl, or the Michael Phelps example, or being on Kylie Jenner's playlist.
And so how do you make money?
One is sponsored content. We've had so many brands reach out, want to be surfaced, labels wanting to push music, venues, arenas. And then the next way is partnerships, revenue shares, licensing opportunities, the sports teams, the leagues, the other live streaming services. The next one is really the data play behind this. There's so much data around music. For example, if The Rock was listening, you know, we could analyze his following, his listeners, and we can show you these are the types of genres that you're where they live, their demographics, and we can help people retarget those people.
So can you tell us where you are now? Are you measuring active users? Where are you at? Give us some numbers.
Yeah, so we say we've soft launched. We put it on the App Store because we wanted to test and iterate and see where we're at. And we learned a ton and we're gearing up for a launch.
And how many monthly active users do you have now?
It varies, but plus or minus 5,000.
Can you tell us about the competitors?
You know, there's Vertigo tried to do it. It flopped out. It's had exchanged founders several times. There's another one called Eavesdrop. Eavesdrop's kind of floundered.
Why? You know, why have these dropped out and why are they floundered?
They're most of them. I think we're the only agnostic one. And, you know, I don't think they have the same tech. And, you know, they outsource the technology, which is just not a very good user experience. And then they've also struggled to onboard talent in a meaningful way.
Do they have any good talent, any notable influencers on those platforms?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
This whole song and dance so far is pretty basic. Who's your competition? How are you going to make money? Yada, yada. And Jason seems to have the right answers. But then the investors bring up a big green elephant in the room.
Why doesn't Spotify shut you out and do this? I mean, this sounds so obvious. Why is Spotify missing this?
They don't do it because of really two reasons. The biggest reason is it's a crowded experience. They're cutting out features left and right because there's just too much. They've gone so much into podcasts and moods and everything else. There's just too much content on one screen. And the other big reason behind it is the agnosticity of it. The winner of the social space will be agnostic. Whether you get your music from your coworker, your girlfriend, or even your favorite athlete or celebrity, they might not have the same music service as you. They might have Apple Music, you have Spotify. And so they've noticed that it's hard to do social right.
But couldn't one argue that Spotify is so popular, so pervasive that they have enough?
No.
No, Apple Music is gigantic.
Yeah.
Well, okay, either one of them is so, they have so many users that this would be a great feature even if they kept it within their own platform.
I would disagree with you. There's a couple different ways I could go here. One I'll say is Shazam, right? You know, Shazam sold, I know Rich Riley, the former CEO, I've got connected to him with 3-Year Buds, and he said the reason why he was winner is because he goes, I'm Switzerland. It doesn't matter. Anybody can use this. He goes, the winner of the social space will be the same way.
Here's the thing he's getting at. Even though Apple owns Shazam now, it still works with all the other music platforms. Apple wants as many people using Shazam as it can possibly get. Because, well, data. Jason sees the same potential for earbuds. But before he can mine all that data, he needs users. And to get users, he's going to need some celebrity power.
The winner of the space will have a moat, and the moat is really simple. Who got the stars on and using it?
That's when we come back. This episode of The Pitch is brought to you exclusively by State Farm. We talk to a lot of entrepreneurs on the show, and one thread that connects them all, they're not just pitching their business, they're pitching themselves. Because small business owners know that their business is more than just a company, it's their whole life. And State Farm gets that. State Farm agents are small business owners too, and they know what it takes. They can help you choose personalized policies that fit your budget. That's the personal touch. That's small business insurance from State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Welcome back. What's unique about earbuds is that the product Jason is really selling isn't the app. It's the celebrities he gets on the app. Without lots of influencers to follow, who cares? Nobody's going to use it. Here's Michael.
Tell us about your relationships with professional sport associations or teams. Like, the winner of the space will have a moat, and the moat is really simple. Who got the stars on and right. using it? What's your star acquisition strategy?
Well, it's to show them how they can monetize it themselves, right?
But how are you going to do that?
You played.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I used to live with Rob Gronkowski when we trained for the draft. Like,
well,
I have
played.
I know, are you to walk us through the strategy? Because I think it's great, but take away from football for 1 second. Let's go basketball, anywhere else, or swimming, or what is your acquisition strategy to make this really big?
It's really the relationships. I know that may not be the answer you want to hear, but we have those relationships. I was just with Baron Davis the last 2 days, and he said he could get every NBA player.
Yeah.
So their interest in doing it is so that they can make some extra money?
Well, the number one thing is they can engage with their fans. And then if they can do that by making money along the way, that's the bonus.
Yeah.
And that's why actually the host of the X Games reached out to us because he said, Jason, when me and all my snowboard buddies get to the top of the mountain, we all press play at the same time.
Yeah.
And he goes, and we've been asked, and we've been so many brands and, you know, TV sponsors and everybody else want to make music a part of the experience. And now we can do that because now we can tell all of our writers to listen.
For sure. It's not going from one person to one person. It's actually, if you were to get Iron Man, if you get the X Games, that goes viral with him. Those are millions and millions and millions.
I really think this will be driven by influencers in the early stages. Like, our whole mindset is to get on the top tier people. And we've had some big name investors. Baker Mayfield invested in our last round. Patrick Mahomes is coming in this round.
Oh, yeah.
If you know sports ball, Jason is rattling off some pretty big names who've already decided to invest. But before our investors decide, Michael has a very simple question that could sink this entire deal.
Tell us about your previous rounds in this round.
We did a small friends and family round in the early days when we were just building a beta product. I raised $630,000 from friends and family, and then last year we raised $1.5 million.
At valuations?
The first one was at $3 million pre-money, and then the last one was at $8 million
pre-money. And currently, what are you doing?
We're raising up $3 million on a convertible note.
What's the cap?
The cap is a 14.
So how much have you raised of the $3 million?
We're a little north of halfway.
Okay.
This is a tough one for me, but I'm going to pass. And it's basically only because of price. If you told me, hey, we're just kicking it off, we don't have any commitments at 14, I'd say I was in. If we could talk about a set of terms that I think are more appropriate for where you are, I don't generally feel comfortable asking people to revisit that. But I really think you have some good insights here. I think the product's going to work. And I think kickstart that.
Would you revisit
initial.
That?
I was going to ask you what you thought evaluation would be fair.
Eight.
Right. Despite the early stage, at eight, I'm in.
I'm interested.
Yeah.
So let me just cap it up. I think what Phil is saying is that he'd be in at a lower number. Mm-hmm. Charles being a lower number. I tell you, I'm in at a lower number.
Me too.
We're all in.
I'll do a $500,000 at eight.
Look, I came here because I recognize, you know, who each and every one of you are and the power behind that. And I want strategic capital that can help us in other ways. I do feel like I need to talk to our existing investors
because
I believe they have a voice in this as well.
Of course.
What just happened? Was this all of our investors getting on the exact same page and saying that they're all in, but with one big caveat? They're saying that they'll invest if Jason lowers the price tag on his company from $14 million to $8 million. And to be clear, this is a huge ask. Because what Jason has to do is go back to his previous investors and tell them that the company that they invested in already is worth less money than they thought.
I'll tell you the thing I like most about it is I think it's very hard to find untapped, unmet consumer needs. And I think the number of times I've seen just regular people sitting around all on earbuds or AirPods, the idea that everyone could listen to the same thing or everyone could listen to what someone else is listening. This is an untapped consumer need, and you don't find those in consumer very often. It's basically impossible, as you probably know, it's basically impossible to raise money for anything in music because generally you get stuck in the morass of licensing and the labels. Yes. And I think
very true.
This is unique.
The thing that I think is quite impressive about your presentation is you have a very understated, humble, but confident way of talking about your business that for me, as someone who's unfortunately lost money on some companies in music, it's very sober. And in a good way. And I think that's really impressive that you were able to take what's oftentimes just a rat hole, a sinkhole, whatever you want to call it, industry for an entrepreneur to go into and tease out a really good, independent, conflict-free way to thread the needle.
And I think if I go back to our current investors and the people that committed to this round, obviously the people committed to this round would love it. But I think the question I would first get asked is like, well, how much?
I would look at, we're at the tail end of our current fund. We have a new one coming online soon, so it'd probably be 50, but with an eye toward doing more if we could.
Okay.
I would be between 1 and 200.
Okay.
I'd be between 1 and 200.
Great. So it sounds
like $1 million.
But in all sincerity, I have one of our investors in our fund is called True Capital, and they represent something like 400 of the top professional athletes, and they would be phenomenal.
See, that's what you want.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, great.
Go team.
Yeah.
Okay, well, good luck. Come back to us.
Yeah, I will.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Jason walks out of the room, and the investors can't wait to talk to each other about this pitch.
I'm either looking at a zero or $1 billion play. Yes. I know I've said that before. I have no,
exactly.
But I love it. I mean,
great.
Oh, yeah.
But
I'm so excited about it.
I love this.
You know. I just need to pay for the risk, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but
this is so interesting.
I think this is one of the most fresh.
Yeah.
And
I would use
as
it.
You said,
I'd like to look at the other two, you know, that he mentioned.
I mean, Apple tried to do this with Ping. They tried to build their own. And I think the problem is a bunch of people have tried to build music social networks.
I couldn't wait to get into that room and find out what about this deal struck such a major chord with our investors. And then Charles said to me,
I normally hate music startups. If you had told me that's what it was going to be before, I would have said, Mucci, I don't do that.
But I did do that.
Y'all were very excited about this. How much of your decision to invest was because as an ex-NFL player, he had the network to bring in all of these influencers?
I think that's very important.
I think that's it.
I think all good consumer pitches for me come down to an insight on human psychology.
Yeah.
And I think we understand is like average people want to listen to what famous people are listening to. And if like that's a insight that not everybody has. A lot of people have tried to do things in music.
If he gets the stars, this thing takes off.
And Hyatt's 100% right. If he gets, and I think the reason this will work better now than 5 years ago is any influencer with 100,000 social followers.
Yeah.
You don't need Tom Brady. You don't need Pat Mahomes.
Agreed.
You could get an Instagram influencer with 350,000 followers. And I think he just had this insight that like that's what you need to unlock the market is you need people really want to know what they're listening to. And I think you can build a really interesting product that way.
The investors think Jason could go triple platinum on his debut album. But when we come back, turns out getting to the top of the charts is harder than Jason thought. This episode of The Pitch is brought to you exclusively by State Farm. Small business owners know that it's not just business, it's personal. Your business is your life, and State Farm gets that. State Farm agents are small business owners too, so they know what it takes. They can help you create a personalized insurance plan that fits your small business needs and budget. And they live and work in your community, so you're not just getting an insurance plan, you're getting that personal touch. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today. Welcome back. Jason walked out of the pitch room with interest from all four investors. But to turn that interest into investment, Jason would have to lower the price of earbuds. A few months into it, producer Heather Rogers talked to Jason about how it was going.
So in the pitch room, all four investors said they'd go in if you lowered the valuation from $14 million to $8 million. What was it like to hear that?
I mean, the first reaction, it's good, right? It's some of the top investors in the world want to give you $1 million because they believe in you and in your product and your vision. And that's extremely validating. And it just feels extremely good. But then the reality sets in of like, there's bigger implications of this, right? And I want to do right with all the people that got us here. Mm-hmm. But figuring out how to make it work, that's the more difficult part.
Jason left the pitch room with a tough job. He had to convince his previous investors that earbuds was actually less valuable than they thought it was. He knew those conversations weren't going to be easy.
I texted several of our top investors and said, hey, you know, I'd love your advice on something. Let me know when you have a time to chat. And over the next week, I talked to most of them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them honestly just weren't that comfortable with it. And they said, you know, you can find that same funding elsewhere for the valuation that better fits us and it does right by us.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about one of those calls?
I called and said, hey, these are the four investors I pitched. This is how it went. And he didn't say, no, don't do this. This is dumb. But he did say like that he disagreed with it and he didn't feel like it was the best move for the company to make. And I'm not saying his opinion was right or wrong, but his opinion was that they were using their position of power to negotiate a better deal for themselves. And he thought we were worth more than that. And he thought it would be taking a step backwards to settle for this type of investment.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel when you got off of that phone call with that investor?
I felt bad in a couple different ways, but it's hard to describe it. I felt bad that I had to make that phone call. I felt bad that I didn't have a clear answer for him and he didn't have a clear answer for me. And I felt bad that, you know, I want to be focused purely on the business and growing it and reaching all those milestones that we've set for ourselves.
It's interesting that you took what the investors on our show, what they said to you. It sounds like you took that very seriously.
I mean, there's so much that those four individuals, not only can they do themselves, but they can also call other relationships in their network. And so sometimes it's hard because, you know, I think what the valuation we have is very fair, but reaching this stage valuation isn't the end goal. It's how do we get to 100 million? How do we get to 500 million? If these individuals and these investors can help us do that by getting there faster through their relationships, then it's absolutely worth exploring.
Right.
And that made the biggest impact of how flexible is this valuation? You know, if those relationships come through, then the valuation is flexible.
Okay, so Jason is willing to risk his relationship with his old investors so that he can work with our investors. He thinks it's worth it, which makes you wonder, how is it going with our investors?
What's happened with Jillian since you were here?
The day I went on the show, I think we've exchanged emails, texts, and phone calls. She's kind of leading the charge for the rest of investors.
Who are some of the people that Jillian has introduced you to?
One of the funds Jillian introduced me to manage a lot of celebrities and their funds. Mm-hmm. If that group comes in, then that's the exact example of the terms would be more flexible because that's a dream partner and that could help us scale so much faster. We've been talking to them for a couple of weeks now and it's at the stage where they're pitching their clients of seeing who would want to be involved.
Got it. So you think if that comes through, you can go back to like that investor you had the phone call with and say, look, this is a big deal. It's totally worth lowering the valuation for this.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be a game changer for us. That would definitely allow us to change the evaluation.
Right. So these doors have opened. I mean, it's interesting to me. Like these doors have opened, like through Jillian and potentially other investors from the show. just because you said, I'm willing to talk about the valuation. So you didn't actually lower it, but you're just saying, like, we can negotiate, but show me what you can do. Is that right?
That's, yes. I don't want to negotiate against myself. So when they ask me to lower the valuation, I ask them, well, how else can you help? And I think there's a trade-off there.
Charles, Michael, and Jillian, they still haven't actually given Jason any money. And Phil, well, he already told Jason he's out.
Are there downsides to all these connections that, like, Jillian is making, and you're meeting new people and they're like, yeah, we're interested, but we need to, like, find out more about you? And are there any downsides to that?
Downsides is not how I'd phrase it. The only, I guess it's a downside. The only thing is it takes time, and time kills deals. And so it's a tough balance, because you want to make sure you have the right people involved, but every time, you know, you go through the due diligence stage with someone, it drags things out.
Okay, so how many investors are you waiting to hear from before you can tell everyone what's going on?
As soon as Jillian and her connections decide what they want to do, then I think that'll basically set off a chain reaction.
So, like, part of me, when I think about that, these people are supposed to be, like, risk takers and, like, you know, decisive people. And it seems like they're not.
I'm not going to say that. I'll let you say that. But I don't know if that was the fool of me into saying that, but I'm not saying that. I'm not taking the bait.
I'm going to go ahead and take the bait. Here's what I think. What's happening to Jason happens to a lot of founders. You get caught in this balancing act between your old investors and the new ones. The old investors wanting to preserve their piece of the pie, and the new investors who want a fair cut of the action. And inevitably, you get yes, but from all these investors, but nobody's actually writing a check yet, because they're all standing around waiting for someone else, that one domino that will make the rest of them fall. And the founder is just caught in the middle of this, trying to figure out what the hell happened and why they can't just work on their business. So, do not be deceived. This is the world of venture capital. And if you're going to take their money, you've got to play their game. Anyway, Jason didn't say any of this. I'm reading between the lines just a bit. Our show is hosted by me, Josh Muccio, produced by Heather Rogers and Kareem Maddox. We are edited by Blythe Terrell and Sarah Saracen. Theme music by The Musemaker. Original compositions from Brickmaster Cylinder, Bobby Lord, Peter Leonard, Matthew Bowl, The Musemaker, and Names Are Hard. We are mixed by Enoch Kim. Lisa Muccio planned the recording of this pitch. And here's a quick reminder that there's no offer to invest being made to or solicited from the listening audience on today's show. You can follow The Pitch on Spotify and listen for free, or find new episodes wherever you listen. Also, you may want to check out our Instagram page, at The Pitch Show, for those of you who like visuals to go along with your podcasts. We are coming at you with a brand new episode next week. See you then. This episode of The Pitch is brought to you exclusively by State Farm. If you're a small business owner, you know that it isn't just your business, it's your life. And whatever your business might be, you want someone who understands. That's where State Farm Small Business Insurance comes in. State Farm agents are small business owners themselves, living and working in your community. That means they know what it takes to help you personalize your policies for your small business needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.